Overheard at Yoga is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications expert and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. It's your girl, Christina. This is Overheard at Yoga. So let's crank up the heat and get down, dog. Hi, lovelies. This is Christina at Overheard at Yoga. Welcome back. I'm hyped today. Sharika Tanaya is here, and she is a sexological body worker, a somatic sex therapist, and we go way back. I remember when I had dreadlocks and we were in like a jam band scene. We were just talking about like some crazy cult conversations we were having around the kitchen table many years ago, but you've really, I feel like, just done so much cool work, and a lot of it has been centered around yoga, I feel. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so excited to talk to you. Will you give us a little intro about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Sharika Tanaya, and I am what's called a somatic sex educator and sexological body worker in training. So I'm enrolled in a school called the Institute for the Study of Somatic Sex Education, and I'm in level 3 out of 5. So I'm still in training, but it has been such an incredible journey. And absolutely, I would say that the journey began with yoga because yoga was my first introduction into the world of somatics. And for those who don't know, the word somatic, it comes from this Greek word, somatikos, which means concerning the body, or soma, which means the body in its living wholeness. And it's this understanding that so much of who we are, we have all these different layers, like in yoga, the idea of the koshas. There's the physical body, then there's the energy body, the mental emotional body, our wisdom body, and so on and so forth. And so in the realm of somatics, we recognize that in therapeutic settings, that these things that are going on with us in the physical, they also impact us emotionally and mentally. They also impact us energetically. And so in the study of trauma, we're starting to realize within the last 10 years, I would say, that some of the best ways of working with trauma and helping people release trauma is by going through the body. Dr. Bessel van der Kolk wrote this awesome book that I highly recommend called The Body Keeps the Score. And yeah. Have you read it?
I'm reading. Is that the book I'm reading? I'm like, where's my phone? I have an audiobook, and it's called, I feel like there's similar books with similar titles, and I just want to make sure that I'm not saying I'm listening to that one and I'm listening to a different one. The Body Note, Audible. Here we go. Oh, if we start listening to it right now, that's going to be hilarious. The Body Keeps the Score. I'm listening to it right now. My friend Annie recommended it to me, and I am loving it. What chapter am I on? I have no idea. I'm really chapter 5. I'm just diving in.
Nice, nice. So the first half of the book is all about trauma, and Dr. van der Kolk worked with veterans, which is meaningful to me. My dad's a veteran.
And I come from a family of veterans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he uses real life examples of working with people, not just veterans, but a heavy focus there. And so the first half is like the understanding of trauma as it works in the nervous system. And then the second half of the book are all these different treatments. And several of them are somatic or body-based treatments where in some ways talk therapy falls short. Mm. And when we have traumatic experiences, they trauma is basically a set of physiological symptoms that are the result of either a singular acute stressful event or can be the result of a chronic ongoing trauma. Either way, that trauma gets lodged in our nervous system. And a lot of people know about, you know, fight, flight, freeze as the mm-hmm. common responses when we are encounter danger. But our awareness of that has expanded. And basically, when we're in a situation where something bad is happening and we can't fight, flight, or freeze, our nervous system will ramp up with all of that energy. And there's this cascade of neurochemicals and hormones that happen to help, you know, different things happen, like blood gets sent to our muscles so that we can run or, you know, our pupils dilate so that we can see in the dark. Our breathing becomes faster so that we can propel ourselves in trying to run. But if we can't run, if we can't fight, then all of that ramped up energy gets stuck in our bodies. Mm-hmm. So it's through the body that we are able to access it and then release it. That's the idea of somatics. And so in sex education and things like that, so many things get stored in our bodies. And so, yeah, basically our school is teaching us to get in contact with our body as the first step, and then different body-based approaches, whether it's breath work or movement, sensate focus, anatomy, mapping, erotic trance, touch techniques. In that way, we can access it through the body and then release it. And it's been pretty powerful.
Why sex education? Why were you inspired to go in that direction?
Well, you know, I grew up really religiously.
me too.
Yeah, I grew up fundamentalist Baptist Christian and borderline cult, I would say. Mm-hmm. It was really intense. And my whole family, every last member of my family was into it. And so was I until around the time that I hit puberty. When my sex drive kicked in was when I started to recognize fundamental things that to me are wrong within the teachings of the Bible. And around that time, a few other things happened in my life, but it was basically a journey of recognizing the truth of how my sexuality actually worked and recognizing that the way in which it worked, which I was taught was evil or an abomination, is actually something that set me free. And my whole life, as I've come out as a queer woman, as I have engaged in different sexual activities, I have come to know myself more and have come to the perspective that rather than placing my attention or my awareness in some external authority, whether that's a priest or a concept of God, that rather I can connect with the God that's inside of me, the peace. I feel like we all have a sliver of God within us, and we can connect with that if we learn to listen to ourselves. And ourselves, a key component of that is our body. And our body will tell us the truth in so many ways when our mind will lie to us, because our minds are subject to our ego and our ego is subject to our conditionings. But there's so many situations in which my ego will blah, 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 say something, but then my body actually says a totally different thing. And yoga was the first area where I was taught to pay attention to my body and where I even gained the sensitivity, even gained the ability to speak the language of my body. And that informs my somatic sexuality work. And that's what I'm teaching people to do. Yoga is one avenue. Somatic sexuality work is another avenue, as is Qigong. So there's different approaches to get to the same place. But I feel like we're living in a culture where so many of us are disassociated, and I totally was before yoga. And it has been a work of the last 10 years to gain an awareness of my body and gain an awareness of the truth that's laden inside the flesh, blood, and bones of our bodies.
Oh my gosh. I feel like it is traumatizing to some aspect of growing up sexually repressed and being taught that natural chemicals happening during puberty are evil. And that was like a trauma for me that I was slowly understanding and exploring and growing out of. And I remember you did an educational workshop with our artist friend, Suzanne Chetwood. Mm-hmm. And I was so amazed by how many different types of women and different ages, different sexual orientations from different backgrounds were at this event. Mm. And one woman who was older, I think I was sitting next to her or really close to her, but she had announced that she had had her first orgasm ever. And she had been married, I think, for 30 years. Mm. And how beautiful that moment was for her. And I felt how honored I was that she felt comfortable in our space that you created and facilitated to share that information. And I thought, oh my gosh, what an amazing journey she's been on.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It has been magical. You know, at that same workshop, that workshop was the Paint the Petals workshop. Yeah. So that's a pretty fun workshop. I'm actually going to put on another one here soon. But it's a fun workshop where the participants are basically invited to connect with their genitals before the workshop. And it's for folks who identify as female. And so they connect with their genitals before the workshop, and they were invited to take a picture of their genitals, which they then bring to the workshop. I would lead a little lecture on women's sexual anatomy and function. And then my artist friend gave us like a how to paint your vulva step-by-step lesson. Mm-hmm. Super fun, super intimate, and a little edgy. A lot of my workshops can be.
I'm like hiding my little Polaroid photo. And then when Suzanne was coming to help me with like my artist techniques, I didn't know what I was doing. And they wanted me to come away like happy with my piece. So I was like, don't look at my photo. I have an ingrown hair. She's like, it's okay. Paint that in there.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is we have and this is a general blanketing statement, but I'm just going to make one. As women, I feel like we have so much conditioning to feel shame around our genitals. So much shame and so much conditioning around quote unquote, what is normal. Mm. And so a big focus of that workshop is women seeing how genitals present in actual women. You know, pornography, there is like one type of vulva and it's like the one vulva prototype that they always show, always have, and everybody thinks that's what vulva should look like. And even like the way that we name our genitals, like labia majora, which is Latin for big lips, labia minora, which is Latin for little lips, that in itself is incongruence, because I prefer to use the terms outer lips versus inner lips, because a lot of women's inner lips are actually bigger than their outer lips. So even that nomenclature inherently makes us think that we're weird. And so when we are able to see other women's genitals, which when do we ever get the opportunity to do that?
Nope.
We recognize, well, actually we're normal, and actually genitals look very different from one person to the next. And there's so many beautiful expressions of the vulva, just like there's so many beautiful expressions of flowers. And you can appreciate an orchid as surely as you can a rose, as surely as you can a daffodil. And even though they look different, it's the variety that makes them beautiful.
I think it was your workshop where I had seen photos of the clitoris organ that's not just like what you see on the outside, but what you see on the inside. But I didn't like get a lot of understanding of that. I like briefly seen it somewhere, but you never see this. And I'm trying to remember where I saw this. There's an artist who has been trying to get that shape in art and created I'm really bad at this, you guys. I'm gonna remember this. but basically she was saying, you see phallic stuff everywhere, like penis everywhere. Everybody loves it. And artwork and culture. And she's like, you don't see that shape of the clitoris. And I don't know how to describe it. Here's this, and then there's this. It goes on the inside. Sharika's just looking at me like, oh, girl, you need to come to one of my classes. But she's trying to implement this art and then go on tour across the country and just be like, here it is.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's the whole clitoral complex is what I call it.
Oh.
So when we think of the clitoris, we always think of the little button, the little pearl, all these cute little names we have. Uh-huh. And that's just the glands. So the clitoris is actually all of our genitals as women are homologous to male genitals. And basically we all start out in utero as trans, really. Mm-hmm. We all start out with what's called the genital tubercle. And that genital tubercle, the different tissues create the binaries of male and female and all of the gender spectrum in between in different formations. So, for example, there's the head of the penis, which is called the glands, and the head of the clitoris, which is also called the glands. The penis is composed of a bunch of erectile tissue along the shaft. And we also have a whole bunch of erectile tissue. So the clitoris, if you were to peel back that hood on our clitoris, there is a shaft that goes up. And then there's these two legs that almost look like a wishbone that lie on the inside ridge of our pubic bone. And then aside from the those legs, there's these vestibular bulbs, these bulbous looking bags. And all of that tissue is composed of the same erectile tissue as the male member. And so women get hard, just like men, and men get wet, just like women. Our genitals really aren't that different. And that's why it amuses me, this conversation around like transgender stuff. It's like, you know, 1 in 100 people is born in some form of intersex. And mm-hmm. when we actually look at how genitals work, there are so many conglomerations and different things that contribute so many different variations between male and female, and in, you know, some are either, some are neither naturally. And so that's why the binary thing is so misleading. But anyway, so yeah, we have this entire clitoral complex, and just like a man, the whole thing is supposed to be swollen. And part of this complex that I forgot to mention is our periurethral sponge, which is this tube of erectile tissue that surrounds our urethra. And it's commonly referred to as the G-spot, which is highly, highly misleading, because the G-spot isn't a fucking spot. Is it okay if I swear on here?
I fucking think so. It's my podcast. We can do whatever we want.
Okay. Yeah. It's not a fucking spot, people. It's a tube. It's a tube that surrounds our urethra, and it too becomes erect. And when we become aroused, it swells up, and it actually will compress our urethra. And that is our body's natural protection against UTIs. Oh. So that bacteria can't come up into our urethra. Uh-huh. So a lot of times, and this is again, a general blanketing statement, not true for all cases, but if you're commonly experiencing lots of UTIs, it might be because you're not letting your full arousal process happen. You're not letting yourself become fully hard and the entire clitoral complex becoming swollen, and you're engaging in penetrative sex too soon. So it doesn't have time to swell. And that's too something I just want to share, is that I'm a lesbian. I've been in a partnership with a woman for the last 8 years and was with women before that. And I can say, for me, I would never penetrate a woman, never, unless her entire clitoral complex is swollen at least 3 to 4 times its normal size. Only then would I penetrate. Because if you try to penetrate, or if you try to access the quote unquote G-spot, when a woman isn't fully erect, then it's actually an irritating, and it doesn't feel good. She has to get hard first. So
amazing. Yeah. I'm going to use that expression.
The clitoral complex, or which expression?
Instead of saying I'm wet, I'm going to say I'm hard. I'm sorry, I'm giggling so much. But that's awesome. I'm going to use that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, and it's true. And it helps too with the whole awareness of transgender people, of recognizing like there's really not that, we're really not that different. Mm-hmm. But not that gender is we're talking about anatomy, and gender is not anatomy.
Yes.
So I want to be clear about that. But, you know, if people understood how we are kind of default trans, and then, you know, hormones play their role, I feel like people would be, if they were aware of this, they would be less surprised, I guess, or less taken aback at the fact that people totally are born in the wrong body, so to speak.
Who are your clients that you help with this work that you do?
Well, kind of like with the people who attend my workshops, it is super varied. I'm working with people, men who are first responders, who have a lot of dissociative tendencies, or who, you know, have spent their whole lives kind of being in that male, like, heroic state of mind, mm-hmm. you know, or savior complex, if you will. They've formed themselves their entire lives around being what other people expect them to be. Mm-hmm. And so trying to, like, connect with, well, who am I actually, and what do I actually want? I'm working with a younger woman who's in her early 20s, who is a dancer at the Torch, and, coming into her sexual empowerment as a dancer, and then getting in contact with her boundaries. I'm working with a woman who in her 40s, who's a mother of six, who, like a lot of mothers, has been conditioned to think that, like, giving is her role in life. And so therefore it has turned into a situation where she can't ask for what she wants, or feels guilty when she does, and how that impacts her relationship, her sexual relationship with her husband, to folks who are exploring their sexual orientation or their gender, their understanding of their gender. It is across the board.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that you're doing this work. What are your yoga classes like? If someone were to come take a yoga class from you, what could they expect?
Well, you know, I tend to get people into their sensual body. So I do a lot of focus on, like, what's happening in your senses, first of all. And then I also have gotten really into pelvic floor awareness, and how to sense into the pelvic floor, how to create more aliveness in the pelvic floor. And there's different modalities or different options for doing that. Kegels aren't for everyone. But there are different ways to get in touch with the pelvic floor that aren't invasive. I've also been taking a mentorship with this badass woman named Halo Soronko, who is a tantrika. And so my yoga practice lately has been highly informed by tantra yoga. From my understanding, which is limited, tantra yoga has more of a focus on, like, energy. It's a spiritual science of cultivating our life force energy, our sexual energy, our chi, whatever you want to call it, and first becoming aware of it, and then noticing how it moves, and then eventually control, like, learning to move it in a way that you want for a specific purpose or reason.
Mm.
And I'm not, like, an expert. I wouldn't call myself, a tantra expert or anything like that. I'm learning. But it has been really interesting how it's kind of adapted or changed my awareness of yoga.
Do you know Jamie Archibald?
Yes.
Okay. I did a session with her, and it was fascinating. And I was with a partner, and her space was just beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, beautiful space. She's so wonderful. And my partner was such a good sport. He did great. So we're in this session, and she has us, she has him holding me, and I'm sitting on his lap. I'm like, how do I explain this? He's, like, sitting in a chair, and then I'm straddling him, basically. And then,
meaning, like, you're face to face?
We're face to face. We're very close to each other. She dims the lights so that we feel like we're in our own little world. And then she's just, like, passive in the background, offering, I guess, as, like, a yoga teacher, she's just, like, saying, look at your partner in your eyes, start breathing. And she went through, I'm I'm trying to remember. It was so long ago. She went through like we'd eye contact, breathing together. Mm-hmm. So finding your breath work together, hands on each other's hearts, feeling your heartbeat. So there was like a touching thing, a feeling thing, a visual thing to help connect us. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of took us on a path to find what would help us feel most supported by each other. And I thought, wow, it was spiritual, but it was yoga. It was really cool. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, she just gave me like a little mini intro taste. So I can't imagine what else it goes to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's so much there. And I guess what we're getting at is like, there's a whole other world of intimacy and spirituality that is integrated and interwoven with our sexuality. And it's so different than what we're taught, because we're taught, and again, general blanketing statement, we are taught that sex is like this physical act, this thing that we do, or in religious circles, it's this like union of man and woman and husband and wife and sanctified in the eyes of God. Only for the purpose of procreation. Boo. The clitoral complex is in direct contradiction of that. God created the clitoral complex, people, just so you know. So when we take procreation out of it, mm-hmm. what's left is spirituality and pleasure. And when we investigate sex from a perspective of spirituality, that's when we get into disciplines like Tantra, which is, you know, sexual energy is this way of finding enlightenment, general blanketing statement. And then the Chinese sexual Taoism, where sexual energy is something that we use to circulate through our bodies to increase our physical vitality. Different people have different perceptions of what that energy is for, how it should be used. But ultimately, intimacy and connection with each other and connection with ourselves is where the magic can really come into playing. And so many of us live in very isolated bubbles. It's even though we're in the world of social media and more quote unquote connected than ever, so many of us feel isolated and disconnected, and not just from each other, but from our own bodies. Mm-hmm. And that's why as yoga teachers, we're doing so much to try and get people back in touch with their bodies. Mm-hmm. But when we are cultivating a greater somatic or body-based awareness, well, that also means that a lot of times we'll feel our pain more clearly. But in somatic sexuality work, we use pleasure as a way of resourcing people in the midst of their pain, as a way of, yes, here's my pain, here's my story, here's all the things that I've gone through, and my body holds those stories. My body keeps the score. It doesn't forget anything. There's that. But there's also this other world of pleasure, and there's this other world of sensuality and beauty, and it starts with connecting with ourselves. And when we can connect with ourselves, then we can connect with other people in this deep, intimate, spiritual, sexual way.
If somebody is interested in doing this type of work, what are some things they need to be careful with when searching for an educator to help them on this path, or what are some like first tips you can give to someone that they can do to work on this energy building?
Oh man, I love the question. Thank you for asking that. So important. This is all from my perspective. So one thing that I would share is people need to be aware of what's called their personal learning zone. So a lot of times in our culture, we're in this go, 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 get it done. And we're all so fucking goal oriented. You know, it's like we, you know, want to have sex so that we can get to the orgasm. Mm. The entire concept of foreplay is like, it implies that this is the stuff that's happening before the play, but no, actually the foreplay is the play, and we're trying to slow that down. And
my girlfriend calls that tummy time. cute. And I've taken that on, and my partner loves that term, tummy time.
Tummy time.
We need tummy time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, when we engage in tummy time, there is this beautiful world of sensation that's available to us. And when we slow down sex, when we take orgasm off the table, mm-hmm. and instead focus on, you know, what can we feel in our bodies together today? It can really create that spiritual magic and intimacy and connection that we spoke of earlier. But we can't rush it. You know, we can't be goal oriented in this work. We need to slow down and be aware of what's happening in our nervous system. Be aware of, you know, do we tend to get, you know, live in, so let me back up. When we've undergone trauma, and our nervous system, our sympathetic nervous system, our fight, flight, freeze, appease system activates. If we're chronically in a state where, if we have a traumatic event, what's normally supposed to happen is our sympathetic nervous system gets activated, and we deal with the danger, whether we're fighting it, whether we're running from it, whether we're appeasing it, or whether we're freezing. All of those are protective mechanisms that we use to deal with the danger. When the danger has passed, our parasympathetic nervous system comes in to chill all of that shit back down. And so then we, you know, it's commonly called the rest and digest mm-hmm. Part of the nervous system. And so in this way, that's how we maintain balance. But if we live, we can get stuck in this chronic state of sympathetic nervous system activation or hyperactivation or hyper arousal. And when that happens, we're chronically activated, and we dull our ability, like our parasympathetic can't come in to calm us back down. And so we're just living in this highly stressed nightmare. State. Yeah. Or the opposite can happen, where we go into hypo arousal, which is more of the freeze response. And, you know, when we say freeze, a lot of people don't stop to consider what that is, but it's kind of like, it's more than just like freezing. It's going numb. It's disassociating. It's feeling yourself as dead.
Yeah.
It's deep. And we can also get stuck in hypoarousal and living in this chronically disassociated state.
Nightmare.
Yeah. And I see that a lot with first responders, police officers, firefighters, paramedics, where disassociation is the protective mechanism, and they live in that space all the time. Veterans too. So we teach in somatic sex education about staying in your personal learning zone. So, you know, if you're in a space of hyper arousal, learning and expanding your capacity for contented enjoyment or relaxed enjoyment, which is the realm of the parasympathetic. Or if you live in hypo arousal, you know, learning to expand your capacity for excitement without falling into anxiety.
Oh, I need to work on that.
Yeah, a lot of us do. And so your personal learning zone is when you're challenged, but you're not unsafe.
Okay.
You have to maintain a sense of safety. So to answer your question, number one is, whoever you're practicing with or considering practicing with, do you feel safe? And by safe, I mean, do you feel empowered if, you know, you start engaging in some kind of body work with this person, and maybe it starts as a yes, but it turns into a no in the midst of the practice. Do you feel safe enough to speak up and say that? Mm. And I'll tell you right now, a lot of people aren't because of their attachment styles or the way they grew up. Maybe when they were kids, they when they said no to their parents, they learned that no comes with withdrawal of love. And so as an adult, that same child will have a hard time saying no because they associate the saying of the no with the withdrawal of the love.
Yeah.
And wow. So consent is, you know, not only just recognizing when it's a yes, but also recognizing when it turns from a yes into a no and being able to voice that to that person and that person respecting it. That's number one. The other thing I would caution people about in finding practitioners is, beware of people who style themselves as gurus and who style themselves as, I'm going to heal you. So, beware of that, because there's a certain amount of ego A lot of people in our culture want to be looked at as gurus, want to be looked at as, you know, guides. But I'm finding that a lot of the people who are preaching the preach don't actually live it. People will read things out of books and regurgitate them in their workshops or in their classes, and they haven't actually done it themselves.
Oh.
And so it's the blind leading the blind. Versus in my realm as a somatic sex educator, I don't see myself as a healer. I'm not healing anybody. What I am is a teammate. I'm a teammate with my clients, and I'm working with them for them to heal themselves. And it's the difference between that perspective versus I'm a healer and I'm going to come clear your chakras and do all the stuff for you or whatever it is. You know, I feel like it's better to empower people to place their authority within themselves rather than to place their authority as me, as a somatic sex educator, or in somebody else who's their guru or whatever. Because it's kind of the same thing as, you know, my religious upbringing. Mm. When you put your power in some external authority, your priest, yeah, or this idea of God, rather than in yourself, that's when people get led astray and horrible things happen.
I feel like I'm the opposite of some people, where they will see other people as authority over them and they won't be able to say no. Like, is it your doctor that you can't speak up for yourself? Is it someone who's older than you? There's so many different ways. And I feel like after feeling repressed in my religious experiences, anytime someone claims to have authority, I'm like, well, who the fuck are you?
Yep.
And so I'm always like, worry, like, don't be in a cult. Is this a cult? Okay. And sometimes I feel like I'm in the yoga cult. I've drank all the Kool-Aid. I am in it. It is so deep. But even in some ways, I'm like, no, I do my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
I view myself as a yoga teacher, as somebody who's just creating the space, mm-hmm, for someone else to have the experience. And that really helped me, because there are a couple of teachers that I've met over time who are like, look at me, I'm your teacher, I'm taking you to this place, I'm me. And I was never about that, and I felt a lot easier putting myself in front of people when I realized it's not about me. Mm-hmm. It's just, can I create the stage for them to find their own dance?
Well said. Absolutely. When I first got into yoga, it actually turned me off, that kind of like spiritual, egoic pretension.
Yeah.
But luckily I found the school that I went to, and the owner of the school was a guy who worked with the Kripalu ashram established it. And they worked under this guru named Amrit Desai. And he was like Amrit's right-hand guy. They like created the Kripalu ashrams all over the country. It was really successful. And Amrit would preach this idea of celibacy and enforce that within all the ashrams. And the owner of my school, Don Stapleton, fell in love with one of the women who was at the school, this badass named Amba. But he resisted. He like didn't act on it until years later. It turns out Amrit had been banging the secretary the whole time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it's like, again, whoops, people preaching what they themselves aren't practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, I don't know. I know that yoga comes from a tradition that honors gurus, and that's a big focus of it. So I want to honor those traditions, and it's a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slippery slope.
I think the Dalai Lama, Buddha, the Dalai Lama I know has said, if it's true for you, if it works for you, follow that. If this doesn't work for you, then it doesn't work for you. So honor yourself. And that's why Buddhism has been, and that Eastern mentality has been attracted to me. Because what's true for me may not be true for you. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that idea better.
Well, and earlier you commented about, like, you know, being in the yoga cult and drinking the Kool-Aid. But I feel like a lot of us, when we're teaching yoga or meditation, all we're doing is offering an experience to people.
Mm.
And we're not telling them what they're going to experience. We're not telling them, like, you know, what to expect or what they'll feel. We're just saying, hey, pay attention to what your experience is and be with that, whether it's pretty and you're expressing the perfect form of dancer, or it's ugly and you can't even balance on one foot today.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the experience is, be with that experience and be real about that experience, and with loving acceptance, and without attaching meaning to those sensations or meaning to whatever's going on. And so people, that's why yoga appealed to me, despite my my skepticism or disdain for people telling me what spirituality is and what to expect.
Barf.
Because it's like nobody told me what I was going to feel, you know. And when I'm there on my mat or practicing, it's like I'm just in touch with my actual experiences. And that's truth. That's not somebody trying to control me or trying to, you know, guide me into a way of thinking or dogma. It's just my experience.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you, what have you overheard at yoga?
I have overheard someone queef during yoga.
And, was it a headstand?
I think it was actually an inversion.
That's usually when I do it.
Yeah. And I just wanted to bring that up because bodily functions are normal, and I would even say integral to great sex. This is a little truth that nobody ever wants to talk about in sexual embodiment work. No one ever wants to talk about this, but you know, we have this idea of what sex should look like based off of movies and pornography, and it usually follows the same tired storyline of like man and woman come in contact and intense eye contact and start kissing and clothes start falling off in artful strips, and you know, immediately they go to penetrative sex, and a few gasping pumps later they're coming together, and oh, isn't it wonderful? But that's not actually how great sex works. You know, great sex, really powerful orgasmic sex, in my experience, involves massive like pelvic floor contractions. And when we're contracting our pelvic floor, what's going to happen? Poop, farts.
Oh my gosh.
Pee. when a woman's going to ejaculate, it feels exactly the same sensation as if we're going to pee. Mm-hmm. So speaking from my own experience, I actually prevented myself from ejaculating from 24 earlier because I thought I was going to pee on my partner.
Yeah.
And so getting comfortable with bodily functions is integral to being a great lover.
Oh my gosh. That's a great tip.
So when you queef in yoga, just go with it.
We had an inversion workshop, and the teacher just like first thing out of the gate was, just so you know, queefing might happen. And the teacher was male, and he's like, it's okay, it's totally fine. He's like, I've heard it all. Now we're gonna get upside down. I just needed to get that out of the way.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, get it out of the way and embrace it, because it's the body speaking. And if you're squeamish about it, then your lover isn't gonna be comfortable opening in that way. And I've, in my lovers with women, especially with women identified folks in their bodies, it's like I've been pissed on, shit on, bled on, you know, like
accidents happen,
farted on. It happens.
I think you want your lover to be someone that, like, if something less than magazine perfect happens in the bedroom, like, you can laugh about it. I think those giggles in the bedroom are funny. Like, all those random body noises. Like, if we can laugh together, then we can make great love together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you have any cool workshops coming up? Or?
Yeah. Well, I am planning another Paint Your Petals event. I'm working with a different artist this time. As much as I love Suzanne Lee Chetwood, hopefully we'll work together again. But now this time I'm working with Lisa Cheney, who is awesome. And she's going to be doing a very different style where we're going to be spacing it out over a couple days, and it's going to be very ritualistic. She also does a slightly different type style of visual art than Suzanne. And so that's coming up July 24th, 25th. And then I'm going to be releasing another Boundaries and Consent, the Touch Essentials 101 Consent Workshop.
Mm-hmm. Is the Consent Workshop... is it adults only? Can kids come, or are you recommending parents come?
Ooh. I would say, you know, it's funny because in the workshops that I've taught, I've had several people, mostly it's adults who've come, but several of them have been like, my teenager, I need them to know this. And, so I have been asked to facilitate something for teens. And so I'm open to that. But, you know, in the workshop, I will use examples that are like sexuality based.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm feeling a little uncertain about how to change that languaging, or if I need to change that languaging for younger people. So that's kind of a work in progress. But I would say, I would suggest that parents do it first, mm-hmm. and then kind of get a feel for how I facilitate it. And then they can decide, you know, what the best approach is with their kids, and we can collaborate on that.
Amazing. Where can people find you?
Well, I am on social media. So I have a Facebook business page called The Sensual Essentials. My website is just that, www.thesensualessentials.com. And I'm also on Instagram. And of course, you can find me by my name, Sharika Tanaya, on Facebook. But yeah, my website is definitely a good place to start. If you're curious about this work, if you're curious about me, I write a blog on there that's can be a little entertaining at times.
I love the blog. I love your emails. I think the work you do is so powerful and so important. I'm so glad you're here, and all this information will be in the show notes if you guys are listening and want to connect with Sharika. Thank you so much.
Thank you too, Christina.
Yeah. Bye, friends.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and I want to hear from you. Please send me your overheard at yoga stories. Tell me about your yoga journey, what you love about your home studio, or the funny thing you overheard at yoga. Find me on Instagram at overheardat.yoga to submit. There are so many different styles of yoga and opinions about yoga, but the one thing I've seen in all my travels to different studios is yoga brings a community together. Namaste!